A healthy pet is a happy pet. Healthy Hemp CBD can help dogs, cats, birds, horses, and other furry friends with wellness issues from anxiety to arthritis. Healthy Hemp's high-quality natural ingredients set them apart. They use full-spectrum hemp that's certified organic and grown in Colorado. Plus, they include mushrooms, which can boost immunity, and green-lipped mussels, which can help with joint support. Healthy Hemp oils, topicals, food toppers, and treats are USDA certified and formulated by veterinarians. That's why Healthy Hemp has been trusted by pet lovers since 2014. Help your best friend live their best life. Use the code BROCCOLITALK for 20% off your first order at healthyhemppet.com. THC isn't the only cannabinoid in town. Quinn is an alternative cannabis brand exploring the many cannabinoids found in hemp. Their pens, syrups, and chews are designed to mimic the raw plant as closely as possible while creating unique formulas and experiences, and they ship nationwide. Quinn has a rechargeable and disposable pen called Puffy with terpene profiles that mirror your favorite strains. Except instead of just THC or CBD, they also have options that deliver doses of Delta-8, Delta-9, HHC, and THCO. Try out another dimension of our favorite plant. Quinn is your express lane to happiness. Turn on at myquinn.com. That's Quinn spelled Q-W-I-N.
This is Menle Golakai Agri.
And this is Lauren Yoshiko, and you're listening to Broccoli Talk, a podcast for cannabis lovers. Well, spring is in full swing. I am overwhelmed almost at the pace at which things are blooming and reopening and happening.
I'm not ready, frankly.
I know. I'm like really cool to see people like out past 9 p.m. in Portland. It makes me like very happy and feel like I went to a roller rink for the first time in a really long time. But it's like Portland's one roller rink, and going in there and seeing so many people having such a good time and just vibing and expressing themselves and having fun together and like lovingly bumping into each other and being like, you're good. It was very heartwarming. And I was like, oh my God, humanity. And it was like a, you know, jarring juxtaposition to everything in the news coming in on all media platforms. So I did revel in that, like the good parts of people being able to be together again. But it also means I've seen more family in the last few weeks than I have in like 2 years. So let's just say I have not gotten on track yet with my resolutions to mellow out THC content.
Ni tampoco.
What about you?
You know, airy season's about to go down. And frankly, Lauren, my Pisces weed sister, this Pisces season has been very difficult.
It has been charged. I could not agree more.
If this is a hey sis, you good? The response is not so good. But I'm pushing through, and I think a lot of us are going through changes, and the challenges always, it's how we continue to push forward and create some sort of solace for ourselves and for our bodies to heal and continue throughout all of it. But I send a hug to you, and I'm looking forward to the spring, a shift in energy.
Cheers to that, and a hug to everyone listening, and bong clink, because it's been a long winter.
Yeah.
So, okay, fuck the winter, fuck this plane. What's new in the broccoli universe? Let's start to depart from reality a little bit, because that's why we're all here.
A lot is happening in the broccoli universe these days. The spring issue of Broccoli Magazine will be dropping soon. So head to broccolimag.com/subscribe to make sure that you get a copy.
Actually, I'm excited for the spring issue because I have, I think, one of my favorite interviews I've ever done. I don't want to like ruin the surprise, but a really cool woman in a different part of the world, making connections with people, embracing her background in a way she never had before.
Oh, I can't wait to read it. A few episodes back, we did an episode all about Broccoli's weed and flower photography book, A Weed is a Flower. And we made a beautiful candle to go with the book. It's made in collaborations with Make Lab, who designed the fragrance to pair with the images in the book. It's It's going to be so good.
I can't wait.
It's a heady pairing of jasmine, herbaceous, terpenes, vetiver, and smoke. Ooh. And it features art by artists who appear in the book. So again, beautiful collab, beautiful combination moment. It's a limited edition, so keep an eye out for these.
This is going to be so good. I'm excited. Before we get into the details for this episode, we want to get you all involved for the next episode in April.
Hey.
So to honor the very special month of 420, we are going to do our first listener question answer situation. We want to answer any questions that you have for us, as in me and Menle, advice on working in weed, weed lube recommendations, weed confessions, hit us with whatever. Whatever your question is, email it to hi@broccolimag.com. And that's just H-I, just greeting, not the adjective. Or send a DM to Broccoli on Instagram @broccoli_mag. Please send stuff in by April 8th so that we can get you in there. That's going to be a fun one. Okay, so who did you talk to for today's episode?
I had the chance to sit down and chat with the illuminating, the lovely, the very intelligent Monet McCullough, aka Plant Mom, who is a horticulturist originally from NYC, but currently in Amsterdam. And she has over a decade of experience caring for indoor plants, blending passion and business. And her goal, I think, has been to really be able to use design to educate people about plant and plant ownership in a more sustainable way that makes plant owners more confident. I think there's so many misconceptions, right, about plants and being a quote unquote plant parent and what that looks like.
Totally.
I think she's got a great story and I'm really excited for everyone to just to listen and to learn more. I think it's time. Let's get it.
Let's get it.
I guess I want to start off with plant ownership and how it seems to have gone off during the pandemic. I'm curious, have you seen an increase with business? What does that look like? Do you feel like it's kind of helped your clients reestablish and reimagine this connection to the natural world?
I kind of want to answer this question a little bit in layers, just because when we first started in the early 2020, I had actually just started working a little bit more with just a few clients who thought it would be a nice way to just have plants in the house. And I actually helped design one of their houses like as the pandemic happened. It was like,
oh, wow.
Everyone was work from home. And then I emailed her and I was like, do you still want to do this or should we not? I mean, I ordered the plants. I mean, they're here.
Right.
Yeah. So it was really interesting how even before everyone started buying plants, it was kind of already on the come up. I think a lot of people see the explosion of people buying plants kind of concentrated in 2020.
Right.
And it was very explosive, but it has been on the come up for quite some time.
Yeah.
In terms of business, yes, definitely.
Love it.
It grew in a way that I didn't really expect. Now we're in, you know, the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh phase of this. And now you see things, of course, slowing down, people being more intentional about their purchases. And I think that's also really special to see.
I love that. And I think you know this more than anyone, being a plant parent is not easy. I think a lot of people sometimes assume it's just like cute placement on their Zoom video calls or whatever. But you've even warned people in a piece I read that you had in Vogue that there are capital D demands, right? Like, yeah. I think you said being a plant mom is essentially like nurturing and that's what you do. And I would love for you to speak on that, you know, like the real, it's corny, but the real life parenting, you know, that takes place.
Yeah, I mean, with nurturing anything, I think we almost always associate it with complexity, you know, like if we think about children, like, wow, that must be like hard or, you know, like those kinds of things. And that approach is so normal.
Yeah.
But when you are kind of addressing plans, I think it's also goes into like how we view ourselves as human beings.
Okay.
As above them, we often want it to be simple and we want it to be easy. And we don't often associate it with, you know, the nurturing that we do that we find difficult. There's no blueprint for it. You know, there's no, right. there's no rule book. And in my experience, everybody wants one. You know, that's why, you know, everyone wants a book or something.
Yeah.
How can I master yep. this? How can I, without taking the time? And it's an old saying that Japanese farmers, they say that it takes about 3 years almost to learn how to water a plant.
Oh, wow.
And that's kind of how the patience or the kind of ways we should be approaching this. Like, how long will it take me to really get to know this thing? You know, like mm-hmm. even in relationships, how long can you like nurture this relationship? Is it going good? Is it going south? Is it, you
Facts.
Know, is it dying? Is it dying?
so real.
Yeah.
You've hit that on the mark too, right? It's like, how long does it take to get to know something, a being? That's so beautiful. But what's the love story with plants? Tell us about that. How did it happen?
Oh, my love story with plants. It's a layered kind of story. I started when I went to school in New York City. So I'm from New York City.
Hey.
I also went to university. I studied in New York in Manhattan. I was studying like fashion and visuals and things like that. But I was always still including like natural things in my projects. I literally used to get bad or not so good grades because I put plants in the stores and in my renderings and such.
Oh, interesting.
Looking back, I was just like, that's so interesting. You know, like I was out here getting F's because it was too many plants in the store. And now every store, you can't even have a store without having a green wall or something.
You can't.
And that's for your store. That'd be like what would make you legendary or whatever. Anyways, I wound up being a florist in New York after school for about 3 or 4 years. And it was lovely. I loved it. And even though like you have flowers and plants, they don't always overlap. But I was still more interested in the plants. And I remember I was literally on my lunch break and I decided to go to Home Depot and I got some plants. And just like a lot of people, I was like, oh, this is it. This is it. From there, I was still working like as a florist, but I still kept buying plants and learning about plants. And then eventually I started like looking for jobs. Maybe I can do something like if I could be a florist in New York, maybe I could do something with plants in New York. I don't know.
Right. You could take it anywhere.
Yeah. And that's what I actually started doing. So I wind up applying for a job and I started from one day to the next. It was almost like I was supposed to be there, which I of course I was. I was taking care of plants in different offices in New York City. So I was just like this plant lover, just going around to these huge companies and taking mm-hmm. care of their crazy plantscapes. And
so dope.
They were even doing like some of the residential things and the things that I even do now. I mean, I was like, oh my gosh, this exists. What do you mean? And this is like unimaginable. You know, I'm a young Black girl from Queens, New York. Like, I couldn't believe that I'm like, I went to work today with a watering can. Like, this is unbelievable.
I love it. Oh my God.
And I just fell in love with it. And I was like, yeah, this is, I don't know what I need to do, but I need to do this.
That is a powerful love story / origin story. Thank you for sharing. It's incredible. I'm like, damn, I can't even imagine with the watering can, like a little gold. Skinny. I mean, you probably need more than that because as a lot of plant lovers and people in relationships with plants know, it's like the watering can is never big enough. I mean, I don't know, maybe I need a hose situation, but anyway, I would love to switch gears to one of our favorite plants, mm-hmm. Cannabis sativa C, the species. What is your relationship to this herb, both as a horticulturist and a consumer? Yeah. I think we've kind of talked about this, but I'm curious, what has been your experience maybe even growing cannabis as a house plant? What's it like in Amsterdam? There's so much, I think, to uncover there.
Yeah, my relationship with cannabis is mostly closer to use than it is with growing and being able to cultivate. And even,
okay.
I would say, learning more about the plant.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm okay with that.
Yep.
I think being in Amsterdam, I feel like I always disappoint people when I say this, but It brings you very close to it, but it puts you so far away.
Interesting. Okay. Because you're not a tourist, you live there, right? So there's a different texture to that. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Like, of course, I absolutely don't even know what I would do if I had to go back without, like, coffee shop culture. Like, I need to be able to just go down the street and buy some weed and go home.
Yes.
Like, no frills, but it's still heavily stigmatized. Mm. Yeah. Quite heavily stigmatized. And I think it has to do with Amsterdam being like this, you know, the weed city and things like that. So right. A lot of people have the opposite effect when you get to live here.
When it comes to being high or elevated from herb, do you think that it helps you connect to your work and the plants that you work with? Do you feel like there's sort of a texture of relationship when you're blazed?
What? Absolutely. I mean, what I loved about when I used to do maintenance, even here, like I used to do maintenance on my own sites. I don't do them anymore.
Good.
But even when I was in New York, I would get super high and then go and just, you know, feel on these plants and just be cleaning these yep. plants. Like, those plants have never been cleaned like the way I clean them when I am blazed. I'm getting in every corner. I'm getting to know that plant. And I think that is very cool. Like, I don't know if there is an Instagram account. Maybe I'll just put it into existence. But
please,
people getting high and just taking care of your plants. Like, just that. It is such an experience.
It's one of my favorite things to do in the world. That's probably the only reason why my plants are alive and healthy, because I'm mostly high when I'm caring for them. I want to dig a little bit into just like the washing and like this, again, this nurturing. And you've given me some really good and consistent advice when it comes to my plants. I think the most recent were the scales that were on that like giant fiddle leaf mm-hmm. fig tree. And you were just like, put mm-hmm. it in the shower, just put some soap on it, get a toothbrush. And I'm like, oh my God, a toothbrush. And I think you have so many gems, and I would love to just ask, what is one of your biggest pieces of advice when it comes to plant parenthood?
Yeah, there's so many, but when it comes to, okay, so I'll break it down. If you are thinking about buying a plant, do what always works for you. Like, I do not disagree with people who don't fertilize their plants. You know, it's not like this like end all. I think my grandmother has had plants sitting in her living room in water for like maybe 15 years. Yeah. Like, and it's fine. It's doing great.
Right.
So who's to tell her that she needs to be using this kind of like special fertilizer for this? And like, you know,
right.
Plants, they want to live no matter what. Maybe when it comes to pests and things, mm-hmm. you don't always want to believe that. And it goes again with how you view yourself and the plant, believe that you can really eradicate anything. You know, I think plants are always a reflection of who we are. Mm-hmm. So if we have, you know, some past, a little bit of trauma, somebody coming up in our space, it's going to take a while to, you know, to get that out. And not only like physically, but like the emotional and, you know, even the trauma of that. So even if you get rid of the pests, you may have tons of yellow leaves and just like a sad plant left behind. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean it can't grow back, right? So depending on how much it meant to you.
Yeah.
I don't always talk like about how to eradicate pests or prevent them. You can't really prevent anything from happening.
Right.
Eradication of plants, especially when you have lots of them, It's a nice goal, but, you know, don't put that much pressure on yourself. Things can go away for a long time and they come right back like they never left. Paying no rent, okay?
Literally, those scale were living rent-free on that fiddle leaf tree. And speaking of which, this is a very sad but very real aspect of plant parenthood. And I'm curious, when is it okay to kill a plant? Is it ever okay? Do you recommend giving it up for adoption to someone who can sort of quarantine it? What's your philosophy on that?
I just think about what a plant would do in nature, right? If the plant is dead, then you know, you have reached the point of no return. But dying, I mean, a tree can die or die off for like years.
Right.
So it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to die right away. And then you also have to think like, okay, is this one pest that I have that's really bad on this plant, is it going to spread to the rest of my plants and just like kill all my other plants slowly? Right. And then I have a bigger problem. Sometimes what's nice is just like taking a cutting and just seeing how it goes. But oftentimes, again, if you think about like what they would do in their natural environment, they would have things that we don't have. So we're not always equipped actually to bring things back to life or to really decide that they deserve to like live in my house or something, you know, like, no, it says bugs all over the place. It's getting bugs on my other plant. Kill it, chop it down. Thank you, plant. I have served you. You have served me. And now we must part because this is not working for both of us. You are dying. All my other plants are dying.
Yep. Like,
I'm dying.
I'm dying inside because you're killing everything slowly. It's real. Mm-hmm. It's a mm-hmm. sad thing that happens, but thank you for that. That makes me feel a lot better because between you and I and everyone else, I killed that fiddle. That thing was giant and healthy. I snapped it down into a plastic bag and threw it away. R.I.P.
Yeah, because it was actually too much. I'm so sorry.
It was too much.
The thing about scale, what you have, like the brown scale, is that it's so sticky and it gets everywhere. And it's like on your walls and just...
Some ants were mining the sap. I was just like, this is too much. This is y'all are doing the most. And like, I need all of you to move out.
Everyone go. And sometimes like if you have the space, if you're fortunate to have the space and you know the right kind of light, you can maybe even put things outside. I'm working with a client now and he wants to save his plant, and you know what, I'm never going to make the decision or decide anyone's plant's fate. I can just give you several options. And he said even last year when he put it outside, even for the summer, it was doing so great.
Oh, that's great.
And then it comes back inside. And then it comes in, the pests come back. So it's like the plant isn't at its best. It's not thriving, but it's not dying. So it's, you just have to see what you really want to do.
Yeah, that's real. So I've had probably too many plants since my sophomore year of college. And my obsession only grew when I started cultivating weed indoors almost, I guess, 2 decades ago when it started. I've seen that there are so many Black gardeners and plant people and plant parents who are turning or returning to traditions of like sustenance and solidarity and sanctuary, like through these connections to plants. And I think many of us are finding a new sense of refuge in this traditional act of growing things. And I'm curious if that's true for you. You're not brand new, right? But
No.
I would love to hear what you think about this, I guess, for lack of better words, like movement.
Well, I mean, you have to kind of start with that Black people across the diaspora, we are agrarian. Like, we are indigenous to the land. And through systems of oppression, we were not only used to work the land, you know, chattel slavery in the US and the Caribbean and even in South America. And then once that was abolished, we were not able to go back to the things that brought us nourishment. Mm. I think this going back to is such a liberatory practice. It's like, we have always been of the land. We have had to use the land to nourish our bodies, whether it was through survival or just through how we had a relationship to it. So to see that, of course, happening on such a wider scale and more and more and more people really being about it, whether it's indoor, outdoor, whatever your journey kind of is, it's definitely a liberatory practice.
I love that. There was this beautiful piece written by Taya Miles, a professor of history in Harvard, but the piece is called Black Bodies, Green Spaces. And I think there's also a book that's titled that too. Mm-hmm. It has like these beautiful, enchanting images from a friend of mine and a photographer, Naima Green. In this piece, Miles asks, like, why is the image of an environmentally conscious African-American still hard for us to picture, right? Like, I think you were speaking to this idea that this is innate and indigenous to us and for us. And mm-hmm. yet and still there is this doubt. There's a sense of doubt. There's like a confusion. Mm-hmm. Could you speak to that a little?
Yeah. If we think about America, after slavery was abolished, we were not able to actually get land. There was no land for us to be able to cultivate on. What was available to us was either a sharecropping, mm-hmm. which we all know is practically slavery. And I think from there, as we began to move through being able to leave the land, moving towards more like a whiter society, mm-hmm. Or becoming or being indoctrinated into a white society, we started to move away from that. We wanted to have these things, whether it be wealth or, you know, the city life, mm-hmm. and even, you know, the Great Migration. We all left. We left.
There was nothing for us. Yeah.
Exactly. There was nothing for us. We weren't able to use land. And even if we had land, we weren't able to profit off of it. It wasn't possible for us, even though in any type of reading that you read about in during that time, they all came from the South, went to the Midwest, and we take these practices with us, and ancestrally we use these practices in other ways. So, you know, it's always funny to talk about how, you know, a lot of Black people reuse plastic bags, and we reuse this or we reuse that. Like, mm-hmm. we've been reusing things for the longest of time.
That part.
So, you know, this whole like recycling and things and you know, insane and not even being able to picture us doing that because it doesn't like come in a fancy package or backed by some big brand, right. Like margarine containers owe Black people a lot of money.
Oh my God.
The way we use those margarine containers.
Oh, it's so good. I just got like a glimpse of like cracking one open with, I don't know, some sort of stew that stained the inside of the plastic, and I'm excited to heat it up.
Exactly. You never thought anything about it. You was like, Pyrex. It was Pyrex. Like my first Pyrex, I was like, wow, this is it. Like,
oh, it's so good. It's so good. I think you hit on so much. And honestly, we could probably have like a pop out podcast just about the ancestral connection between putting your hands in the dirt and being Black and Indigenous. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious too, is it true what they say about soil being an antidepressant that you somehow intake into your skin? Like, have you heard about that? How does that work?
I have heard about it. It's not something I experienced though. So I always say with these kind of things, like I genuinely don't always like my hands in dirt. I just like to be with plants. Like mm-hmm. that's my mm-hmm. thing. Or my kink or you know. Yeah, when it comes to plants, you know, like some people really genuinely like being in soil. I do not, but I love just being around plants. Like my dream would be to just surround myself like in a circle, and I'm just there and surrounded by all of these plants. So I think plants do make us feel better, even if it's not scientifically proven. Mm-hmm. If we can all get around and like everyone in the world who has a plant is like, yo, this is great. You know, I think that's the result that we need. The hypothesis, like,
I think it's interesting because there is like a similarity when it comes to cannabis, no? And these scientific studies mm-hmm. that say da 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 da. And there's so much anecdotal evidence because we've been around mm-hmm. these living, other living things forever. And it's fascinating that some of us have to read this study or see this clickbait article to really feel like now I'm, you know, connected to a plant because, or I know that this plant is making me happy because now I've read this thing. And so I think that's an interesting thing that you've touched on, it that I think a lot of us in the cannabis industry see over and over again. And it's such an eye roll, but it is the way I guess we exist in this sort of, I guess, like white supremacist scientific aspect of the world and of biology and botany, et cetera.
And similarly with capitalism and with marketing mm-hmm. and, you know, people want to sell plants. That's what, I mean, even you could even say myself, I have a store.
You're selling joy. But
I hope to sell joy. That's what I just want to like, you know, sell genuine service and things like that.
That's what I'm getting. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I still have people coming in like, okay, I'm looking for a plant that cleans the air. I'm like, you're going to need to move to a jungle. What do you like? A single plant can do, you put too much faith in it. It's already, the expectations are way too high. So yeah, so it's definitely kind of fighting this thing. And then, you know, even having people who have these kind of already stigmas attached, even with this cannabis, whether it's plants or outdoor or it's hard, or I heard about this. And if this happens, will you know, and it's like, just,
it's not that serious. It is, but it's not.
I personally don't like when such a complicated, complex thing, which is a living thing, is broken down to be so simple.
Right.
So I think that's also a misconception. Like, plants aren't hard, they're complex.
Okay.
Even in my experience with, you know, putting plants in certain spaces, like, I could think it would grow maybe at a slower pace, and then, you know, 6 months it exploded and it's just bursting out of the pot. And I was like, well, oops. Or some people even ask me, like, how big is it gonna grow? Like, I don't know, how big is a tree grow?
Right.
Very large. Let's break it down to how can I make it thrive, right? Or asking the right questions, or just trying to help people change their mindsets around the questions that they ask. Not, will this plant look good, but will I be able to provide for it? And those are the questions we need to start, like, really asking yourself now that we're not at home as much, now that we are making decisions to leave or to go to events. It's going to change how we perceive and how we care for our plants, for sure.
Yeah. Damn, I want to be a homebody forever, though. Honestly, I'm not ready to go out.
And it was great. I'm still a low-key in the house. If I don't have to go, I won't.
Just to be with the plants. Just to switch back to weed, because we love it. Mm-hmm. We love her.
We love it.
I think weed is being talked about and consumed, I think, more than ever. And it's really wild to witness this plant with so much stigma become sort of a trend, right? And there are so many parallels, I think, to just plants in general when it comes to it being a trend. And do you feel that we're going through a phase or a fad, or is this some sort of, like, futuristic hint that points us towards greener solutions, or, I don't know, a life that is probably inevitably a dystopian society? I don't know, that's encroaching upon us. Or maybe it's utopic. I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe it could be utopic. I don't think it's a fad, because we could say that weed has always been a fad, right? It's come, you know, we've had from jazz musicians, you know, singing, and it was big then, and then it became big, and you know, we have these explosions. What we are seeing now is, like, hyper expansive, right? It's in a way kind of, I guess, heartbreaking because of who it's expanding for, but also being able to be a part of it, feel better around it, have, like, easier conversations around cannabis, even talking to your parents a little bit more about it. I think that's also, like, helpful for our future around it, and who and how we can consume it, the responsibilities around it. Like, it's definitely a playing field,
right?
But I think we are in a nice way kind of moving towards being able to have a lot of information around how to use, for younger people too. Like, you know, I would have loved to have this, like, what, you have all of this and this, and you don't have to go to a random car and get this. Yeah. And, you know, it's like, wow. Like, sometimes I see things, I'm like, wow, duh, I would have loved this. So I think that's also, like, so cool to see.
It is. I mean, just having organic, high grade, like, still green weed as a young person, my brain would have thanked me.
What? Like, I just think, of course, like, they say weed gets stronger, weed gets stronger, you know, what they were smoking then, we're smoking now. And that definitely is the truth. But also, there are some people getting high for the first time on this, like, crazy, amazing stuff.
Yeah.
That they're able, like, you know, organic. This one, you know, this one came in this golden package.
Flavor profiles. Yeah.
That future is also shines bright for people who still, you know, get their stuff from people who are not working in dispensaries. I hope yeah, that also, that we still hold space for that too.
I think so. I think by and large, there are so many folks who are like, I just want to go to somebody I know. I don't want to go to some shop and feel uncomfortable. But thinking of the future, looking forward, there is some beauty surrounding the fact that that is available to us, or at least to some, hopefully most. What's the future for Plant Mom? Are you taking things more outdoors, into the earth? Basically, I'm asking, will you start a weed farm with me?
I would love to go more outdoors. I think it would be definitely after what I'm building right now with plant hoods at the store. And then we also do a lot of design stuff. And then also now that things are opening back up, going back into workshops in person and being able to reach more people in different ways and different collaborations. But I think like the future of me personally would definitely be just being outside on my weed farm, ooh, growing grapes for some wine. Like it is, you know, it's so cliche, but I really want that for myself. And I hope I get that.
I want that for you. I feel like it's going to happen. I feel like it's bound to happen. I want to know about your offerings. Where can we find you on the internet? What upcoming like workshops are happening? Give us the full rundown. We want to know.
You can find me personally, at plantmom.amsterdam. I also have a store here in Amsterdam, Plant Hood. You can find us there at Plant Hood Official. In April, we are going to be doing a really fun cannabis takeover.
Yes!
With some really fun workshops, not only about learning how to grow, talking about some CBD. We have a local person here who makes some products. And we're going to talk about women and CBD, as well as femmes. So it's going to be a really fun month. I'm so looking forward to it.
Yes, I'm jealous. I need to come visit you, please.
It is a tiny little space in here, but maybe by the time you come visit, it'll be much bigger.
It will be. It will be. And then I'll go on the farm. It'll be glorious. This has been so good. It's been so nourishing. I just want to thank you so much for spending time with us today. I wish the best for Plant Hood, Plant Mom, and all the things in the future.
Thank you so, so much for allowing me to be here. And, you know, I'm always rooting for you. So let's just keep making green magic.
Yes, let's keep making green magic. Oh, I love it. I'm so excited to just go and water my plants high now.
This episode was edited by Jay Nathan. Our music is by Giselle Garcia. And our logo design is by Jennifer Wright. Learn more about Broccoli and subscribe to the magazine at broccolimag.com. Thank you for listening.